So I'm going to be talking about our experience here in Louisiana over the past couple of years, starting since 2013. And this is myself. I'm the president of the Louisiana Center for Health Equity and also a consultant with H. Charles Stewart Consultants. And just to say a little bit about the Louisiana Center for Health Equity to put this presentation into context, we are a nonprofit organization that was founded here in 2010, and I'm actually the founder of the organization. And we work to address disparities in health and healthcare across Louisiana, looking at it through the lens of health equity. Our focus is on wellness and community health, and we also focus not on diseases and illnesses specifically, but on the determinants of health. So things like access to quality health care, obviously as a determinant of health, which contributes to the poor health outcomes in Louisiana. As you know, or you may not know, Louisiana ranks 48th in the nation according to America's Health Rankings, a status we have held for more years than I care to remember. We have been either 48th, 49th, one year we got up to 47th, but pretty much we're 49th, really, just above Mississippi. So this is a really nice visual that I love to use when I present, because it really kind of shows you kind of where we stand. Obviously, with Louisiana being 48, it's clear that we would be over there represented on the left side, the right side of the screen, with high rates of infant mortality, smoking, obesity, heart disease, health outcomes are just not desirable, far less than desirable in the state. I don't know if you can read it so well, but in the brown area, there are those social determinants that I just mentioned, and access to health care is there. And negatives on that side, positives on this side. If you have access to health care, you have quality housing, health insurance, those are the things that provide a foundation for having, healthy outcomes. And so that's the reason why it's important for us to really advocate and do the work to create an environment where we can have better health outcomes and become a healthier state. So what does the Louisiana Center for Health Equity do? We are a catalyst for collaboration and community engagement. Our main focus right now is on access to health care and on community health. And these are just a few pictures of some of the initiatives or activities that we've had or things that we have done. We do hold press conferences. We've held a number of press conferences around Medicaid expansion, around some of the legislation that has been introduced over the past couple of years. We've held forums in various sessions, various areas around the state. We have held vigils at the Capitol, a number of different ways that we try to engage the public in this work. Expanding the Medicaid option under the Affordable Care Act is a priority for us, and it is a huge issue here. The issue, as everybody's already said, is we're not doing it. Louisiana governor rejected Medicaid expansion, and he continues to dig his heels deeper in rejecting Medicaid expansion. So he's not budging. Medicaid expansion, why is it so important? Just to give a little bit more in terms of context, I'm getting some feedback. We in Louisiana have a somewhat unstable healthcare delivery system overall, and the public, I think it turned off.
No, I just turned it down.
Okay. The public-private.
That's much better. Is it audible, everybody?
Can you all still hear? Okay. The public-private partnerships, which Governor Jindal rushed to implement a couple of years ago, have really placed the hospital system in jeopardy, and it's having some adverse impacts. That's my nursing term. Those of you who are in the medical community relate to that. Adverse reaction. you know, on the healthcare system in general, we are seeing it impact access to care. We have basically had Louisiana traditionally has had a charity hospital system here, where people who are uninsured, and oftentimes people who have insurance because of access, so sometimes those charity hospitals were the only hospitals in certain areas. But for the most part, the charity hospitals were intended to serve people who are poor and uninsured. And they basically received, for the most part, the disproportionate share funds for the uninsured or uncompensated care. Well, with the privatization, what is happening is there are contracts with several hospitals in different areas of the state, and I'll give you a concrete example. In Baton Rouge, which is where I live, there are several hospitals. There was one charity hospital, which was Earl K. Long. Earl K. Long closed. One of the largest in this region, private hospital, has the contract to serve the individuals, the patients who would have gone to the charity hospital. Well, what's happened in reality is many of those individuals are going to other hospitals because of, you know, location. The location of the hospital is not situated in an area that's accessible to many of the demographic, the folks who normally would have received services through the charity hospital. And it's hard to get to. Not only is it just not convenient distance-wise, but it's in a very busy area where it's hard to get to. So what we're seeing is that the majority of the patients, especially when it comes to emergency room utilization, which for people who are uninsured, that's usually where they go, right, to the emergency room. One of the other hospitals, Baton Rouge General, actually has seen the increase, the uptake, the influx of those patients. And they threatened to close their emergency room because they could not absorb those costs. The state did bail them out, a one-time bailout. There's still negotiations going on about the long-term, how they're going to continue to sustain and keep the ER open when those patients, instead of going to the hospital of choice chosen by the state, they're going to the hospital that they're choosing and the hospital that's closer to them. So, you know, and we're seeing that all around the state. That's just one example. But that's the kind of, one of the examples of the issues with this public-private partnership. It is, in effect, limited access to health care. And then, of course, what's happened with the hospital that got the contract is it's created such an increase in their ER utilization that it's impacting their ability to provide the services in a timely fashion. So when you go to the emergency room, you have, you know, a lot of people sitting in the emergency room, poor people who they're not accustomed to serving. And so now the demographics their patient mix has somewhat changed as well. And that's causing some problems because those who can afford to go elsewhere are going elsewhere. Okay, so we understand that paradigm, right? Being diplomatic here. In some instances, it definitely is appearing to limit access. We also have the impact of the employer mandates on small businesses and providers. That's a looming issue that's threatening some providers, especially some of the providers in the healthcare system who serve people with disabilities, for example, in home and community-based services, who are facing potentially going out of business because they simply cannot absorb the cost of providing health insurance to folks who would and should qualify for Medicaid. As we know, folks who work in many healthcare settings, including hospitals and outpatient settings, doctor's offices, do not have health insurance. Because their providers, their companies do not offer it, and they should be able to get it through the ACA, but they're not able to here in Louisiana. And also the declining disproportionate share payments for those who are uninsured. And there's a whole nother set of issues here with our fiscal situation and budget cuts, after budget cuts. And public health spending here, actually, since last year, has declined. So in the face of not accepting Medicaid, we're also seeing public funding for public health services being reduced. So again, why is Medicaid expansion so important in Louisiana? We already talked about the high number, high rates of uninsured, the strict Medicaid reimbursement. You have to make less than $3,000 here for to qualify for Medicaid, and that's, you know, if you have children. If you don't have children, you're an adult, you don't qualify. Employer-sponsored insurance coverage has been declining for years. But, you know, on the flip side of that, for children, we are doing very well. And Louisiana was one of the model states in implementing Medicaid expansion for children through our LACHIP program. So 95% of our children are insured, and that's getting better because of ACA as well. So, you know, it's not the issue isn't that we don't know how to do this, that we don't have the expertise to do it. It simply is a lack of will, a lack of political will to afford health care to poor working people. The evidence that it works, I'm going to kind of skip through some of these in the interest of time because I want to make sure our next speaker has sufficient time as well. But we have 1.1 million children who are in Medicaid because of LACHIP. We have right now according to the 2013 data, 751,000 uninsured Louisiana residents. And this is how the numbers break out demographically. I think a lot of people have the perception that the uninsured are poor black people. And, you know, that's really not true. It's just poor people, you know. And so, you know, we need to dispel that myth that, you know, it's just helping us, the program just to benefit poor black people. Medicaid expansion benefits those who are between the ages of 18 and 64. There are 2.8 million in Louisiana that are between that age range. And of those, 682,000 in that age range were uninsured, or 24%. Now, when you drill down, I also want to, you know, make this point. When you drill down and you look at that number, that group that Heidi talked about that was in the coverage gap, they make too much money to qualify for the marketplace, but they don't make enough, they don't make enough to qualify for the marketplace, but they make too much to qualify for our Medicaid program as it is now. There are about 242,000 of those folks that are caught in what we call the gender gap here in Louisiana. So in the gender gap, the demographics change a little bit, and you see the percent and the numbers of individuals who are being shut out of the marketplace, and there it is largely, it's more African Americans. The percent of those being impacted by not expanding Medicaid is majority African Americans. So it's basically saying the same thing. We know that the eligibility for Medicaid is up to 138% of poverty. So those who are not able to benefit tend to be, in terms of majority, young, working African Americans. Louisiana's reliance on Medicaid expansion, I think I already talked about that a little bit. We have a heavy reliance on Medicaid expansion. As of July 2014, in Medicaid and LACHIP, our children's insurance program, we have over 1 million citizens who are enrolled, and most of that is LACHIP. Again, I said we have 90% of our children who are enrolled, and so most of that 1 million is going to be made up of children. There are still 719,000 citizens who are uninsured according to the latest 2014 data. So what are we doing about it? We started the campaign for healthcare for everyone last year. January of last year, we convened a group of stakeholders just to have a dialogue forum about it, and it resulted in us forming a positive, proactive, nonpartisan, issue-based campaign. What we do is we serve as a cohesive voice for better access to quality healthcare for all Louisianians. And right now, our primary issue is Medicaid expansion. We promote policy advocacy and building grassroots momentum for the implementation of Medicaid expansion. Initially, we had hopes of being successful in getting Medicaid expansion in 2000. Well, actually, this year was our original hope. That didn't happen. Now we've come to the realization that it's highly unlikely, unless there's a miracle, that it will happen under this administration. So realistically, our goal is at this point to get Medicaid expansion in 2016. So in terms of the strategies that the campaign is utilizing right now, and in year one, there were some lessons learned, and it informed our current strategy. So I'll kind of touch upon a few of those as I go through these. What we're working to do, and we're continuing to work to do, is to grow public support and to educate the public about Medicaid expansion, the importance of it, how it would benefit our state. And I think we've done a pretty good job over this past year and a half, almost 2 years now, in that area. We have definitely, I think, influenced public opinion. There have been several polls, at least three polls, and all of the polls have shown that the public, while the ACA as a whole in Louisiana is not popular, but Medicaid expansion is. And the majority of Louisiana citizens who were polled feel that Medicaid expansion should be implemented in Louisiana. So the administration, the governor, is definitely out of sync with the public and with the will of the people. However, that has not persuaded him one bit. We are working to build a movement for change, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in this initiative right here that we did in partnership, collaboration with the American Public Health Association that's ongoing. We have come to the conclusion, based upon our experiences over the past 2 years and working with the legislature, that the only way to move forward to get this issue advanced in terms of public policy is that we're going to have to move the masses of people. We need people to become engaged. So community engagement, civic engagement is really, really important. We have got to have and build a movement around that and have the capacity to mobilize folks to participate, become active participants in our democracy. You know, it's great to have a democracy, but it only works if we as citizens participate in the democracy. And when we have the kinds of decisions being made, like the decisions that are being made here in Louisiana in healthcare, and healthcare is just one of the areas, we're just talking about healthcare today, that's out of sync with both the demographics of the state, the people of the state, it's out of sync with public opinion, and yet there are no consequences when elected officials are not held accountable, you know, there's a problem with that. And so, you know, we have to figure out a way to move people from the complacency, the level of complacency and disengagement that we see right now in the in what's going on, you know, right here in our state that affects them personally, many of us personally, and if not us, our neighbors and our family members. So that's a huge learning for us, and so that's where we're beginning to focus much of our energy and attention, moving away from so much of a legislative strategy. We had bills, you know, we couldn't even get them through last year. We did better than this year. Last year we at least got a bill out of committee. This year we couldn't even get any bills out of a committee. So the legislative strategy isn't working either. This administration has such a strong hold on the legislature that it's like having one branch of government here. Also, collaborating with organizations with an interest in Medicaid expansion, we, of course, are advocating for health and healthcare policy and primarily access to healthcare, but we realize that we've gotten to broaden our network. We've gotten to broaden this net and work together with organizations that have similar interests or who would be impacted or benefit from Medicaid expansion. Sustainability and capacity building. One of the issues with doing this type of work is that more often than not, we as nonprofits are, you know, always looking for money. It's always a handout, trying to find money to just do the basics, much less having the resources to really do the work that we need to do in this in these kinds of social justice areas around these issues. And we're up against, almost what feels like sometimes insurmountable opposition. For example, in this state, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, all of that has become a hugely political issue. And we just had an election. We are still, there's a runoff for our Senator Mary Landrieu with Bill Cassidy running against her. And I know that's been all over the news, so that's not news to anybody. But one of the issues that continues to be used in the campaign against Mary Landrieu is the Affordable Care Act and the fact that she supported the Affordable Care Act. And, you know, there isn't a counter to that to really put information out about how well the Affordable Care Act is working, how many people have benefited and who are getting health care. So you hear one side of the story, and those who have the information that could counter that don't have the resources to counter it, to have the media to put the messages out there in terms of about the success of that policy. And so we have had significant billions and billions of dollars infused into the state of Louisiana to defeat Mary Landrieu. And largely, like I said, that is one of the key issues that they're just continuing to pound and pound and pound. Koch brothers have infused lots and lots of money into running campaign ads against her. So, you know, we don't have the resources and the funding to counter that. So it's almost like we're sitting back silent. We're shouting from the top of our voices, but nobody can hear us, right? Because we don't have the money that our opposition has to persuade voters, basically. So, you know, that's an issue with doing this type of work and being able to gain the kind of support that is necessary. Maintaining an advocacy strategy, we are definitely continuing to do that, just shifting our focus now more towards the gubernatorial election and having some impact on who gets elected to represent the citizens of Louisiana for the next 4 years after Bobby Jindal. So those are, I think he's coming to tell me my time's up, okay. I'm almost at the end. So that's what we've been doing. I'm going to go through this real quickly. So how can you get involved? How can you help? If you're here in Louisiana, one of the things you can do is join the campaign. If you're just interested in what you're doing, you can sign to be on our mailing list, and then you can go to the website, which is on this thing here if you don't get it. You can also sign the letter. We have one of the outcomes of our collaboration with APAJ for the day of service that they did with us here in Louisiana this week is to have an online letter to the governor and other policymakers urging them to implement Medicaid expansion. We're asking all of our APAJ partners and members to sign the letter. And I have a bunch of cards up here that I can give you to take with you, and you can don't throw it away. Sign it and pass it on to somebody else, and then ask them to sign it and pass it on so it keeps moving. We just need to collect thousands and thousands of signatures on that letter so that by the time we go back to the legislature in 2015, we have evidence that, there is a groundswell of support around the country, not just in Louisiana, for Medicaid expansion. And the letter is housed at this website right here, lamedicaidexpansion.org. You can also connect with us through social media. We are on Facebook, through our listserv, as I said, and also, contributions are always welcome. And that's it. Thank you
very much. So, yeah, I'm here watching TV at night, and I see all this Landrieu bashing. And I'm like, what the heck's going on? I mean, why didn't anybody tell the other side? You got all these uninsured people here that can't see their doctor
why isn't that an issue?
We don't have money.
Yeah, because we don't have the money. I know. It just is a out-of-stater. It's shocking to look at the TV ads. And I'm from California where we don't have campaigns anymore because the Democrats just run the state. But, you know, when I see this kind of stuff, I'm just amazed. So I'm also going to be passing out a sign-up sheet for the public hospital and health equity caucus to continue to put on sessions like this one, where we have subjects that we feel are very germane to public health but also overlap with policymaking a lot. We need to have at least 15 members to maintain our status within the APHA so that we can continue to put on these kinds of sessions. So if you are a member of the APHA, I would very much appreciate if you would put down your name and email, and this will then be a name. If we turn into APHA, then we say, this person's a member of our caucus. Got at least 15, so we can set it off. So that's, we don't mind. All right, so now with that little brief commercial interlude, we'll come back to our presentations. So for our third and final speaker, we have a leader here of the fight for Medicaid expansion here in Louisiana, representing a lot of the faith community, would we say? Which, you know, coming from California, where it's still, you know, it's unions is what you do to get backing from, you know, popular groups. It's really interesting to me to come to the South where, well, that's not such a good option here, you know, and if you need, you know, progressive organizations to represent large bases, you know, you need a lot more effort in the direction of the faith community. So Jacqueline Jones, is here to present. She did not have slides, but she's going to explain the campaign that she's been working on.
But good morning.
Good morning.
I am Jackie Jones, and I am the lead organizer of the Jeremiah Group. And I think before I can say anything about the work that we've been doing around Medicaid expansion, I think you really need to understand who we are. The Jeremiah Group was formed in, I want to say, 1991. And the Jeremiah Group is a coalition of congregations, neighborhood associations, schools, and unions who have come together with the sole purpose of changing the way politics is done here in the metropolitan area in the state of Louisiana. And that's a part of why we took on the Medicaid expansion fight. To start off with, we come as Catholics, Baptists, Methodists, non-denomination, Episcopalians. We come from all walks of life, wealthy, low-income, middle class. Some people look like me. And, of course, we have young people and middle-aged people and even the elderly who is a part of them. We're nonpartisan. We do not support any candidate or political party. Our candidate is always the issues that the people in the metropolitan area brings forward. We do not take any public money. We raise our own money through corporate campaigns, through grant writing, and through the membership dues of our institutions. We take our name from the book of Jeremiah, chapter 29, verse 7, where the prophet Jeremiah tells the people to seek ye the welfare of the city and pray on its behalf, and when you pray on its behalf, you will find your own. So our mission is to improve the quality of life for people in the metropolitan area. Now, we are multi-issue. We do not work only on health care. We work on housing, jobs, community safety, and, of course, health care. And having said that, 2 years ago, the Jeremiah Group, coming from its membership, decided that we would take on Medicaid expansion. And we took it from the perspective of we have to have the relationships locally, as Ms. Alma said, engaging the people. So we started out by going to many cities in the Louisiana area. We focus mainly in New Orleans. Inside of those meetings in those various cities, what we did was we met with people all over, and we heard their stories, and we listened, and we heard people give solutions. I want to say we met with about 7,000 to 8,000 people. We went to Monroe, Alexandria, Shreveport, Baton Rouge, Lafayette, and we had these conversations. But we took it a step further. We met with the politicians, our legislators, Republicans as well as Democrats, to bring those stories and to make an argument to why Medicaid expansion was so important. I think the most important meeting we did with our legislators was to meet with the Speaker of the House on the 4th of July. He said to us, "Jeremiah does good work. We know that you have defeated the governor's tax policy plan. You were very smart." This is our Speaker, John Olario. "You were smart in the sense that you did it through a coalition of churches. You didn't use Jeremiah. But we were trying to get rid of state income taxes and give the rich many, many breaks. But we organized and we won." He said, "However, I think that was a good move on your part." He said, "You have to do the same kind of work that you're doing, that you did with the taxes, with the Medicaid expansion. But here's the deal, Jeremiah. I think you should push forward. I support your work, but not publicly. No. I speak for the governor. If the governor says yes, I say yes. If the governor says no, I say no." And the reason he was so important for us to meet with is because we have gotten him to help with other pieces of legislation. Now, we looked at the people, you know, you've been given a lot of facts and numbers, and so I didn't think I wanted to do that, so I didn't come with any slides. But we met with a significant number of those 200,000 people that we're talking about that's uninsured. And when we met with those people, we got those people to do letters. We delivered over 10,000 letters from persons who would benefit from Medicaid expansion. We delivered, and I brought some of the press. We got a lot of press on the organizing that was being done around Medicaid expansion. And there's some of the articles that I have on the table. But we delivered over 10,000 letters from Medicaid expansion, on Medicaid expansion, with people telling their story, as well as a letter that we formed. But more people wanted to write their own letters. And we're still receiving those letters. So when the letters were delivered, we got a message from the governor. And the message was, did we not understand that this state could not afford Medicaid expansion? And we couldn't understand, what does that mean? So of course we called for another meeting. We didn't get to meet with him. But here's what was told to us through a letter from the governor. Number one, we don't have the capacity. We don't have enough doctors. We didn't have the building. And we would not be able to afford Medicaid expansion on the 4 year. And our question was, "Mr. Governor, but this will be paid for year one, year two, year three. So we don't take Medicaid expansion because of year four. We let people die." We never got another response from our governor. But I thought that was just an interesting way to kind of tell us to back off, even to the point some of our partners were notified, who's that Jeremiah group, what are they doing, and so on. And I mean, we didn't back off, because remember, you give us no money, we're not in anybody's hip pocket, we can go forward with what we needed to do. We did two rallies. We did a rally in 2013, and it was Life, Liberty, and Health Care for All. And then we did a rally in 2013, and then in 2014, leading up to Dr. King's birthday, the celebration, we did another rally. And we focused this rally on, you know, Dr. King said, of all of the forms of inequality, injustice in healthcare, that healthcare is the most shocking and inhumane. And so our city council, let us do a meeting in the council chamber on the day before the holiday. We packed city council with people who came and told their story. When we delivered the letters to Governor Jindal, our city councilman boarded that bus with us and delivered those letters. We understand that, and I think Ms. Alma alluded to it, we will not get any Medicaid expansion while we have this administration. But what we are doing is keeping the conversation alive. We are continuing to meet with legislatures to tell the story. We're continuing to engage our constituents in our institutions and outside of our institutions. We've partnered with other organizations. And as Ms. Alma said, again, it is hard to do this work because, remember, we're just volunteers. The good thing about being a member of the Jeremiah Group, we are affiliated with a national organization, the Industrial Areas Foundation. So we have sister organizations across the state as well as across the country. I would say in this campaign, we have probably touched the lives in conversations and in actions with over 20,000 people. Doesn't sound like a lot, but that's a lot of folks for everyday people to be working to go after. We continue to do outreach and look for folks to join us. And, you know, at the last session, what was really sad, because we couldn't get any bills passed, we tried for a constitutional amendment to let the people vote, because if the legislatures would not give us the satisfaction, we thought having the people vote, we couldn't even get that off of the floor. And so it is by design, and we understand that we will not get Medicaid expansion. And just think about, you're here in our great city for a convention, and many of the folks who are serving you, the hotel workers, the bellmen, the taxi drivers, the waiters and waitresses, and the cooks, these people are the people that do not. That's right. You hear all of that good music. They don't have insurance. So, again, we have to keep the conversation alive. We have to have more foundations and that will support this kind of work if we're going to make any headway to actually getting any kind of support. And that's basically where the Jeremiah Group is. Thank you. Oh!